And that works perfectly fine for continuous improvement type of projects, right? So you're going to go from a horse carriage to a more efficient horse carriage. Brilliant, right? But then, you know, in parallel, you also need your more efficient horse carriages, but you also need a small part of your effort to be invested in looking at the new and the disruptive, the internal combustion engines. But the methodology in those cases has got to be different, because the methodology there is the same methodology that venture capitalists use for high-risk, high-return projects, which is success there is you have a portfolio of 10 ideas. You're going to kill, let's say, 9 of them, which is honestly the venture capitalist assumption. But then the 10th one is so big that it will make you rich for life, and it will more than pay out for all of those 9 failures.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Hey, welcome back to Digital to Learn. I'm here with my co-host, Tiffany Snyder.
Hi, everyone.
And we're back with our guest, Tony Saldana. Tony, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be on the show.
Hey, if you haven't heard the first part of Tony's podcast episode, you need to go back right now, stop whatever you're doing, go back and listen to that, and then join us again and hear the exciting conclusion of that conversation.
Now, I'm sure you get questions like this often. It sounds like people want to jump to the end and say, how can I get from where I am to the best of the best, to those that succeed with digital transformation? So I'm about ready to ask you one of those questions. What are the keys to get to stage 5? So your model has the 5 stages of digital transformation disciplines. And in order to get to stage 5, living DNA, basically, I'm sure that's what your whole book is about. So we're cheating by asking you about the last step. But what does that look like? And what are some key ways to get there?
Yes. And you're right. I do get asked that a lot. And I'm glad I do, because that's the whole point in writing a book. So just to back up a little bit for our listeners, you know, remember the Alice in Wonderland thing about where do you want to go? What I strongly believe is that the only true definition of digital transformation is that, you know, we're in the midst of an industrial revolution, the 4th industrial revolution, and everything that you did as a company, as an individual, that made you successful in the 3rd industrial revolution is probably not going to be sufficient to help you in the 4th, right? So you can go back any of the previous industrial revolutions, horse carriages versus internal combustion engine, you know, so on and so forth. And you see that you need an element of, I have to change something. Mm-hmm. So in that particular context then, the only definition of digital transformation is to rewire, right? So not just incrementally improve, but rewire your products, as I said, you know, internal business processes and business model. So in that particular context then, what I have done is rather than try and fight the industry on the terminology of digital transformation, I have said it's a spectrum. Stage 1 is what most people think is digital transformation, but it is actually digital automation, right? That's when you're going from physical to digital. So most of what technology providers will sell you is essentially stage 1 digital transformation, which is basic automation, right? Stage 2 is siloed, which is where maybe, you know, one part of your organization, one company, one function within your overall enterprise starts to think disruptively and they're experimenting. And that's siloed because that's not sufficient to change the entire company. Stage 3 is partially synchronized. It's where General Electric was under Jeff Immelt, which is you have a corporate strategy, but efforts within the company are not sufficient yet because, you know, while you've articulated the strategy, you've not completely set up the empowerment that I was talking about. Stage 4 is fully synchronized, which is you have a strategy and you have everybody rowing in the same direction, and you're able to transform yourself one time from being, you know, company X, company Y, right? And stage 5 is then you become a Netflix, where this becomes the DNA of your company. So you constantly disrupt yourself. You don't need the CEO to tell you to do that, right? So that's what I mean. It becomes the living DNA. So how do you jump to stage 5? Well, the answer is you cannot really jump from stage 1 to stage 5, because what you're going to have to do is, so firstly, without a digital platform, you're not going to be able to get to disruptive digital technologies, if you, you know, so on and so forth, you could probably jump over stage three, which is partially synchronized. But, you know, you would have to go from some experiments, which are siloed, to then fully synchronized, where everybody's working against a certain strategy. And then the stage four to stage five, which is a one-time internal transformation to changing your entire organization DNA, which is really what stage five is always a journey. I'm also a part of one of these efforts at MIT, which is around the future work. And we talk about how do you take your current organization, your people, your skills, and completely, I mean, don't change the people, but change the DNA. And it takes a lot longer than changing the technology, right? And so, but what you can do, which is where my book, I think, is helpful, is you can accelerate that entire journey. You can avoid the false starts. You can avoid, you know, much of that 70% failure rate. And I think that's success for us.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that. I love that there's not an easy answer. And you have to put in some work. You got to put some skin in the game to get there, right?
That is true. And this is really where I failed myself, because if I had this IT product that could essentially do digital transformation, you know, I'd be a lot richer.
All of these things take time and probably proceed at varying speeds in different organizations. Mm-hmm. But it's probably safe to assume that regardless of where you are and what you're trying to transform, you need a group of champions who have sustainable attention.
Yes.
It seems like one of the things we often do is, hey, I've got a great idea. Let's do it this way. And we get partway in and it's like, oh, maybe I'm speaking to myself here and my team can support this. I get bored of it and I want to move on to something else.
Yeah.
And I just kind of let it sit there and muddle itself and not really reach full potential.
Yes, that is indeed what honestly does happen in most teams and in most organizations, mm-hmm. right? That's one of the reasons why I love defining digital transformation in the context of rewiring yourself for an industrial revolution, because mm-hmm. then you're able to measure success accurately, mm-hmm. right? It is not success in one project or one product. It is success when a critical mass of your actual revenue and profits come from a new business model or a new product or, you know, a way of operation. And that you cannot fake with one product, mm-hmm. right? That's systemic. So then the question becomes, okay, so that if you set up your goal correctly, how do you execute against that? Which is really the second part of my, you know, disciplines issue. The execution is almost never a one project effort. It is basically mm-hmm. a portfolio effort, right? Okay. This is what I was trying to get to earlier when I was saying the methodology that we use for digital transformation is all about IT project management. Part of it is, again, missing on the culture change, but part of it is also project management that we teach ourselves is all about you have a project, find a way to make it successful. Mm-hmm. And that works perfectly fine for continuous improvement type of projects, right? So you're going to go from a horse carriage to a more efficient horse carriage. Brilliant, right? But then, you know, in parallel, you also need your more efficient horse carriages, but you also need a small part of your effort to be invested in looking at the new and the disruptive, mm-hmm. the internal combustion engines. But the methodology in those cases has got to be different, because yeah. the methodology there is the same methodology that venture capitalists use for high-risk, high-return projects, which is success there is you have a portfolio of 10 ideas. You're going to kill, let's say, 9 of them, which is honestly the venture capitalist assumption. But then the 10th one is so big that it will make you rich for life and it will more than pay out for all of those 9 failures. That's a different methodology than Project Management Institute, PMI certified project management, right?
Yeah.
So it's really how do you blend all of that, which is part of the execution challenge. Yeah.
Have you seen this in higher ed? Any observations in that area?
So, Tiffany, this is a very interesting question because, as an aside, I just started a new company with a couple of friends of mine to provide industry standards. And
so if I could interrupt for you, you just said that so casually. Oh, we started a new company.
I know.
This is the great thing about digital transformation and digital disruption. You know, all you it needs is really, you know, three guys in a garage to start a company. And then, you know, you can talk as if you were Bill Gates, which we are not. But anyway, which is essentially to create this organization to create standards as well as training in the area of global business services or shared services, which is an offshoot of IT and work processes and stuff like that. So in that context, we're starting to work with some universities. So the Milan Polytechnic Institute in Italy, and then Denver University, and you know, so on and so forth. I haven't been in the higher ed space for a long time, but you know, I'm seeing a few trends in our working with them, which are very similar to the trends that I see, you know, when we're working with a pharmaceutical company or, you know, so on and so forth, which is that we're so invested still in our current ways of doing things and current technologies. We get very excited by new technology. So, you know, new learning management systems or digital badges, you know, so on and so forth. And they're all very important. I mean, it's the equivalent of, you know, what's the next SAP upgrade in a large company, right? And so those are important, but, you know, I haven't yet come across too many examples of that venture capitalist portfolio-like things of, you know, crazy ideas which somebody's working on and they're dedicated to killing most of them very quickly after assessing that they're not viable, but then ending up with one or two that's going to change the way the industry, the higher ed industry or exec ed industry in our case works. Yeah. So, you know, again, this is not unique, of course, to any one industry, but, you know, I'm sure there are opportunities.
That's a great answer. Brad and I and the folks behind the scenes are at Indiana Wesleyan University, and we had a team meeting actually right before we're recording this podcast where we were talking about all these crazy things that we've been chasing and working on lately. You know, one minute we're really excited about them and the next minute we're like, what are we doing chasing all these 10 different projects, this, there, and everywhere, including blockchain? And so it's really neat and almost encouraging for us to hear you say, there is some value in trying things. We have to really in this age, and more than just an LMS change, but a true opening our eyes to what is industry doing right now? What can we learn from them?
Yes.
I feel like we're there. We're trying, and we're trying not to get discouraged in the process. Let's say if in our portfolio, 9 out of 10 don't make it very far.
That would essentially put you across industries as among the very few organizations or people that have that mindset. Here's the challenge with disruptive innovation. See, the thing is, when you're in the midst of an industrial revolution, traditional management strategy does not work, right? Because traditional MBA school strategy teaches you that you have to have two elements. One is how to perform your day-to-day operations with excellence. And the second is continuous improvement, right? But that fails during industrial revolutions because no amount of continuous improvement would have gotten you from a horse carriage to an internal combustion engine, right? So you need a third leg to your management strategy, which is disruptive innovation, as Clay Christensen and others identified, you know, several years ago. But here's the dilemma for most people that lead organizations, right? How much to invest in that third leg, right? And I think that's a very industry-specific answer. So Google actually does have a formula, which is 70-20-10 across those three. But Google's in a tech industry in a disruptive area. While I was doing this, you know, work in global business services and IT at P&G, our ratio was probably more along the lines of 80 and then 19 and 1, or maybe even 18, 19 and a half and 0.5. But even at that, the fact is we did have three legs to that strategy. And even by having that third leg, we're better than probably 99% of people that look into it that way. And so therefore, even as you guys kind of think about it, you know, it's important to kind of think about it in context, right? And the context is you identify upfront how much investment you're going to make and how much return you're going to get from that. And again, run that third leg, just like you would a venture capitalist portfolio.
One of the other things we've noticed is we'll try something, it fails. We'll be disappointed, but we'll move on. And at some point in the future, it seems like we can look back and grab that failed venture and bring it back to life in a new time when it's more appropriate.
Absolutely. That is the nature of innovation, disruptive innovation. So there is another rule of thumb, which is if you've got a piece of technology or product and you've got just one startup or two startups in the space, chances are that is not yet ready for prime time to be scaled. Yeah. But critical mass in this space is where you've got five or six startups that are starting to work on it, then, you know, it may be getting to that maturity. So, you know, as a higher ed institute, as part of the education thing, timing is important, right? Because if you jump in too early, you'll waste your time. If you jump in too late, you're just, you know, one of the crowd later on. And so I think your point, which is, you know, you could look at a product and say, no, this is not quite there, but keep it on your radar and then come back to it, or keep looking at, you know, is it, you know, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? It's really important. Yeah.
So Tony has advised us that we have billions of listeners today. And my guess would be that somewhere in that billions, there are millions of people who have been part of an organization where technology transformation is seriously failing. So what word of advice or encouragement could you give those millions of people today, Tony?
You mean other than buy a book?
that's a given. One. That is an absolute given. Cool.
Excellent. I look forward to the million copy bump on Amazon. Now, see, it really honestly doesn't have to be complicated at a concept level. It is very involved and it is very rigorous. So there are two pieces of parts that I would share. Yeah. Firstly, that the answer to any failing project, leave alone digital transformation, is always clarity of the goal and picking the right execution model, right? So i.e. discipline, right? Technology is fun. Technology is exciting. It has a, you know, multi-trillion dollar software and hardware industry around it. That is based on, you know, exciting people to change. And so as a consumer of technology, as a buyer, you know, as the leader of an organization, you have to know this is the industry that is best hyped, right? And so, because that's the way the whole cycle moves. And it's not right or wrong. It is exactly the way it should be, right? And your only antidote to that is discipline, clarity of what you're trying to do and how you're going to get there. So that would be the first, yeah? The second, if you've got something failing, is to go back and ask the question of what parts of it are failing and how do I kill that very quickly and what parts are working and can I pivot on that and build it as a strength? Because there is no complete failure or success unless you're not clear of what your goal is in terms of, you know, almost financial Wall Street type metrics, and you're too late to meet them because you've run out of money or you're going bankrupt. There is no failure there other than, you know, the need to pivot and figure out how to do something differently. So there's always the seeds of success in every failure there.
Absolutely. Tony, it has been such a thrill to have you on the show today for two reasons. One, you're brilliant and the book that you've written is likewise brilliant. But secondly, you're a lot of fun. It was just very enjoyable to interact with you.
I'm going to have to share that with my two daughters. They would respectfully disagree on the fun thing. And actually, they would respectfully disagree on both things, the brilliant thing as well.
Hey, Tony, I did a little professional stalking beforehand on LinkedIn. And is it true that you love, let's see, what do I have here? Funny commercials, parodies, and the like?
Yes,
is it true?
I do. Yes, yes.
Well, Brad's going to go in search of a new co-host after I say this very, very corny thing. Okay, Brad? So be prepared to find someone new. But I was thinking.
I'm already Googling, so go ahead.
I was thinking when you were talking that I'm sorry that you're not more musically inclined for your family, but what you share with us today was music to our ears.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. That is a good one.
Yeah. I frankly wish I could have said that. That was so good.
I'm sure you do, so, Brad. I'm sure you do.
So good.
Oh man. Yeah. No. My dream still. My dream is still to become, you know, like the next Weird Al Yankovic.
That indeed is a worthy goal.
You're not the only guest who's mentioned that. Can I add that?
That's true.
That is interesting.
Common thread.
Tony, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure, Brad. No, really, thank you for having me, Brad and Tiffany. Yeah.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.